This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome. This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Welcome and thank you for listening. We have in studio with us a guest today, a special guest, Brett Bagley. I've known Brett for a number of years, and I have to share with you, this is one of the most interesting bios that I've ever had a person send me. I usually ask most people to give a brief description so that I can introduce them, and I need to share with you what Brett shared with me. First of all, he is a certified addiction counselor, and he is the founder and director of Purple Recovery Services for Men, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, but he listed himself as a father, a husband, and an athlete. And I just think that's awesome. So thank you for sharing that, because I think that truly lets me know where your priorities are and what you think is important. So thank you for being here, Brett.
Thanks for having me, Susan. I appreciate it.
We also have David Donaldson, who's the CEO of the Atlanta Healing Center. He and Brett have worked together over the years as well. So we thought this would make a very interesting conversation about recovery, particularly recovery for young adult males, because I think that's a very specific type of problem area and also of work that needs to be done, and I think your program at Purple does an excellent job of that. So, to start the conversation, I think it would be helpful if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners how Purple came to be, and first of all, the name. Let's go there.
Let's go there. I'd love to tell you the name is based on the fact that spirituality is centered around purple and that recovery's color is purple. But in fact, Dr. Tim Riley, my original business partner, was obsessed with the color.
Okay.
And he used to try to make all the staff watch the movie The Color Purple. And he had a little plaque hanging on his wall that was written a poem that said, "You're a purple person if." And we just kind of adopted that. I was 21 at the time that I took partnership in the company. And I was just thrilled that, like, I had a say-so. I didn't really care what we called it. And it sounded better than Bagley and Riley. So that's maybe not as enthralling as everybody would like it to be, but it is where it came, you know, where we started.
Well, I think it's not a word that you forget. It draws up many different images for people, and I think that's a really interesting way of identifying yourself as with this very vivid, intense color that most people have some kind of emotional relationship to.
So right. They either love it or they hate it. They say it's their favorite color, or it reminds them of drugs, or everything in between. So I do like the fact that it's memorable. You don't get it confused, and people say, "Is that that program with the ridges? Is that Ridge Way or the Ridge something or the Summit or the what?" You know, like they, you know, it's just purple.
It's purple. Right. It's easy to remember. And for those of you listening, let me give you some contact information, and I would ask you to have pen and paper ready at the beginning of the next segment, so in case you don't get this written down, you can. But if you're interested in learning more about Purple and Brett's program, you can go check it out on the web at www.purpletreatment.com.
Yep.
The phone number is 678-572-6856, 678-572-6856. So, again, we'll repeat those numbers throughout the show today, but I wanted to make sure that you had that information because it's well worth looking into. So back to my question, how did Purple come to be?
Well, I guess you'd have to backtrack a little bit or a lot of bit. My family believes wholeheartedly in service. We fostered children growing up. When I was little, they were always into some sort of volunteer, some sort of serving. All of my mother's careers have had to do with something that affected her life, you know. So I had what we would qualify as a misspent youth. Got in a lot of trouble, and ended up having a rehab experience as a teenager. and thought that was pretty neat, and like most teenagers, had no idea what I was going to do with my life, but thought maybe being a counselor could be something that I could do. And so I went about getting jobs at various different places that most people start out in, and thought, these are horrible experiences. I hate working at these places. I had a horrible work ethic. I usually showed up late, and then once I showed up late, I had a lot of opinions about everything that they were doing wrong, which is, in fact, where I met David, working at one of those establishments where I would show up late and 19 years old and telling everybody how they were doing it wrong, and everybody would smile and laugh, and then I'd get reprimanded for not being on time.
Right. Written up.
So a combination of an ego and a poor work ethic led me to make the only logical decision, which is that we could do this better. So that I, at the time, was interning for an outpatient center working with DUI offenders, and thought, hey, you know, we could do the residential component. I'd worked at a place that was wonderful on paper and great in theory. The individuals they had hired there weren't the soberest of folks.
Oh.
Which creates
that's
a problem.
That's not good. Right.
Right. In a small environment. So, in any case, I went about to, in some sense, replicate that.
With sober counselors that are actually
with sober counselors
role modeling what they're there for.
Were passionate and had a lot of opinions and like me, probably didn't show up on time.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, when we first opened, we made these signs that, you know, said, hey, 24/7 admission, call for help or whatever, right? And my friends would joke, yeah, right, try calling Brett at 7 o'clock in the morning and see what happens, you know. But in any case, that was 2003 when we, and my father, who had had kind of a life-changing experience through doing his own family work when I went to rehab, said, hey, he wanted to retire from the corporate world. And
wow.
So we gave it a run together. We both went through counselor training together. And
that must have been interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Training with your dad.
It was a little, you know, especially where we were with Dr. Karen Kelly at Circle Recovery, and she was known for pushing the envelope and pushing your buttons and seeing if she couldn't get you to work through some stuff that was necessary, mm-hmm. so you weren't playing out your own BS in the field, right, and with your patients. And so there was definitely some challenges.
Nice. I like that.
But we, in 2003, we borrowed a little money from my grandmother, and under Dr. Riley's educational umbrella and mm-hmm. licensure, we set out to see what we could do to make a difference in the world of addiction. As you said, working with young adult males. The original intention wasn't to work just with young adult males. It was just that I was so young that we got the reputation for being the young adult place. And when we started, like I said, I was 21 years old and younger than every client that we had. Now, at the whopping age of 35, I'm older than every client that we have. In fact, I went to visit a patient the other day in the hospital, and as we were walking into the visiting room, and he's 21, keep in mind, one of the other patients says, hey, is that your dad?
Oh, ouch.
Part of the reputation that immediately built up was that Purple was a safe place for young guys in recovery to go hang out and to play basketball. And I was doing an outpatient program on the other side of town from where Purple was, and the guys that would be in my program that were 22, 23 mm-hmm. would spend many afternoons over there playing basketball, and they discovered immediately it was a safe place to just hang out, which at that time, and really still today, there are not a lot of safe places for people in early recovery to be able to relax and learn how to have fun again. So from the beginning, the reputation was young guys, come on over and hang mm-hmm. out, and you'll be safe.
And have fun.
And have fun.
And that, I think, was part of the unique proposition after working in the corporate world and seeing young adults sitting in concrete rooms, twiddling their thumbs, bored out of their minds, right?
And, right.
You can only make them participate in therapy for so long before their brains are fried.
Mm-hmm.
In every location is taken on its own life with volleyball courts and basketball and ping pong and slack lines and we encourage that and put a lot of resources into that. And at the end of the day, it always comes back to the people. But creating environments for them to enjoy life most of the time for the first time in their lives, mm-hmm. to participate in life. As an addict's addiction progresses, they check out of everything. Mm-hmm. And I always say, the martial arts, the kung fu outfit is the first to go in the closet, and the guitar goes to the pawn shop, and they arrive to day one of recovery with no interest, no hobby, and a brain that doesn't light up for anything. And just getting them to participate, we do kickboxing and CrossFit and yoga and Tai Chi and hiking and swimming in creeks and running around and team sports and anything that young people like to do, mm-hmm. we do. And all of them say the same thing. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. It's not really my thing. Mm-hmm. Of course it's not your thing. Your thing is getting high.
Right.
Your thing is using. I'm not trying to make kickboxing your thing. I'm not trying to make rock climbing your thing. I don't really care whether you ever do it again. I want you to engage in your own life. Participate in your mm-hmm. own. Let's light that brain of yours up with an endorphin release. So it can practice having some stimulus without getting high.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a lot of what we've focused on in the last several years. The temptation in the treatment world for me is to get away from trusting the magic and the power of recovery. The magic and the power of being together in community and growing and changing together, mm-hmm. And loving each other and having experience with each other. I, as a counselor, as a therapist, can be trained to think like, but I have this power to, if you sit in enough hours with me of therapy and I intervene individually on your life enough, then if you'll just do what I say, right, that I have like this magic wand.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, right? And none of us do, right? An older adult tends to respond better. So David, we'll use David as an example. If the crowd doesn't know, he's a little bit, he's not a young adult.
Sorry. I used to be.
You used to be a young adult, right? Well, David, like many actual adults, has gotten up every day and gone to work even if he didn't want to. And that's a muscle that you exercise.
Right.
And so with a young adult who has never exercised that muscle and lives their entire life based on how they're feeling, when you say, what I want you to do after group tonight is XYZ. I want you to go to a 12-step meeting, or I want you to reach out to somebody that can help you, or I want you to go play a pickup game of basketball. What happens is that they go home and they're laying on the couch and they're bored and their brains are being lazy, and they start surfing Facebook and some cute girls on, and you come in the next morning and you say, well, did you do those things? And, well, absolutely not. I didn't do those things. I didn't do any. I just laid on the couch. And then, I went out and saw this girl and, she wanted to smoke, so we smoked, and that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where as an adult, when you're told to do those things, then you say, well, I don't feel like doing those things, but I'm going to follow that bit of direction.
But I will do it.
Right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the very interesting and challenging work of helping young adults get into recovery. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
This is Tracy Pearson with Prissy Tomboy. Listen to the Prissy Tomboy radio show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time as I interview special guests that will inspire adventure and fitness for females.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction. Today I have Brett Bagley from purpletreatment.com, www.purpletreatment.com. The phone number is 678-572-6856. 678-572-6856. Brett is a certified addiction counselor, a father, a husband, and an athlete. He's also the founder and director of Purple Recovery Services for Men. Before the break, we were talking about the experience of guys learning to hang out, learning to have fun. And sometimes I've had family members look a bit askance at the idea of why my loved one has just gotten into a boatload of trouble. We're spending a lot of money on treatment. Why do I care that they have fun? And it's an interesting discussion because I don't think that most people step back and realize what we're asking young people to do. We're asking them to change everything about their life. And as you mentioned, Brett, as they get involved in their addiction and active in their drug use, they stop doing the things that used to be fun. They stop engaging in growing their mind, developing their skills. They stop hanging out with friends. They may hang out with people, but these aren't friends. These are people they use drugs with. And now we pull them out of that environment and we take away their coping skill, and suddenly they are lonely and they're scared and they don't have any idea how it's going to be possible to live in a world without drugs. And I think that's where Purple and its a treatment program is and services are just so very, very helpful for introducing the idea that you can have friends, you can have fun, you can be safe, you can be sober, and life can have meaning again. It's that hope that I see instilled in these young men and some older men in terms of recovery can be okay, and I can actually do this. And that inspiration, I can do this, is what I see over and over again in the young men that I see at Purple.
Sure. And I mean, Susan, if you talk with any group of quote-unquote normal people and you ask them, you know, what is it that helps you overcome something difficult in life, they're going to spell out a series of essentially God, people, and self.
Mm-hmm.
Three things that for most addicts we're just maladapted to.
Mm-hmm.
Just like don't connect well with people, with higher power, spirit, the spirit of the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, or to have any sense of inner self, to sit with pain, to meditate, to be okay with discomfort, right? To have determination or will, right?
Right.
So, you know, how do you take an individual who's been living a life that way, whether it's a short life or a long life, but nonetheless, most of their mm-hmm. life, and invite them as a resistant individual into changing things that seem counterintuitive, that seem illogical, that seem mm-hmm. irrational, right? And for us,
and certainly things that are incredibly uncomfortable,
definitely,
because they have an initial anxiety reaction to the suggestion of any of those things, and then they actually have a physical anxiety reaction to getting up and going and saying hi to somebody or going rock climbing or anything like that. So helping them walk through that whole experience and beginning to build the muscles, as you were talking about.
And what we do is we set a level of expectation, right? It's not, when their 29 other roommates get up in the morning at 8:30, they just assume, well, the other 29 people got up. It must be time for me to get up, so I'll get up. And people say, how do you get all these young adults to get out of bed in the morning? You have to get rough with them? I'm like, no, they just get up, right? When they all pile in the van to go rock climbing, they don't wonder, can I say no here? Like, I'm not sure about rock climbing, right? Or they say, well, I'm not a people person. I'm very introverted. Oh, that's okay too, right?
Get in the van.
Right? I don't like rock climbing. I'm afraid of heights. Okay, well, that's fine. We'll do the low rock climbing, you know. But creating a community where there's at least 1-to-1, but it's really a 4-to-1 ratio of persons who are active in recovery, who are living a life, an active life, whether that means they're in school or they're working or they're a member of their community or a member of family or they have relationships, friends or intimate, and they are spending time giving back to people who are newly joining recovery and setting this is what we do, right? And so, Wednesday mornings we go for this run, and, we were running around the lake at this park, and it was the middle of January, and we got to the end of the run, and the leader of the run was hot. He stripped down to his skivvies and jumped right in the lake. And so the other 28 of them just followed along, right? Like, I guess this is what we're doing.
This is how we do this.
And so does that in and of itself, so to speak, get someone sober? No. Swimming in a lake doesn't make you sober, right? But participating in environments, following direction, being willing to try things new, being present in the moment of your life. I mean, I promise you are present in the moment of that lake in January, right?
You're nowhere else.
Your brain was on fire, right? In a way that allows you to be less resistant mm-hmm. to the parts that are maybe even more uncomfortable, which is the changing everything about your identity mm-hmm. and changing and participating in 12-step programming maybe when the people are older than you or when that, the being okay to sit in discomfort with self because other people your age are out doing other things seemingly with impunity that you're, not that you're not able to do, you're in fact are able to do them, mm-hmm. But that you're choosing not to do because you want a different life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've always just felt like that, the experiential therapy, and that's kind of what it is, disarms resistance mm-hmm. and allows you to engage in life in a way that you would not have otherwise.
I see how it helps a person's self-esteem. And though my husband hates me when I say this next thing, but the way to build self-esteem is to do esteemable things. Mm. It's not someone else saying, oh, you're so great and you're so smart and you're so pretty. But it's in seeing that you can accomplish things. And inherent in that, well, I guess this is what we do, and if everybody else thinks I can do it, then I guess I can do it. That's a way to help people really build self-esteem in terms of, I don't know if I can do it, but somebody else has confidence enough to make me get in the van, so I must be able to do this.
Right.
And then when they can do it, to a better, greater, lesser extent, they build that confidence that I can do this. I can be successful. And that is something that for a lot of these folks, they've not been as successful as they wanted to be. They've had some failings. They've had some trouble in their life. They've been felt disappointed in themselves, and it's really hard to pick yourself up and somebody saying, you know, oh, you're the best. Well, that's nice to hear, but that doesn't convince me I'm the best until I can really go out and do and prove and learn and grow. And that's the beauty of the experiential, I think.
Absolutely. And I like to say, if you act different for long enough, you will think different. And if you act different and think different for long enough, you will feel different. And if you're acting and thinking and feeling different, then by definition, you're different.
If it's a duck, you know.
Yeah. So.
And that's a hard thing for people to be able to have those experiences. But it's not just about fun.
Right.
Service is a big part of recovery, I think, in your philosophy, service to others.
Absolutely. I think service is the most underrated concept on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the ailment for all ails. I believe my whole life's dedicated to service, whether that's serving the men at the center, serving men in recovery outside of the center, for free and for fun, serving my family, be it my son and daughter, my wife, or my extended family. I believe that, you know, all the world's problems would be much smaller if we were all much more service-minded. Service in treatment or in early recovery was a concept that I was introduced to early on, which is that you can always help the guy that has just a little bit less time than you. And so there are so many different ways to help another individual, to one another, to be loving, to smile or give a hug or listen. We don't do a lot of listening in this world these days, to listen, because you don't have to have the answers, right? And
no.
We find that the men at the center do the work. You know, Susan, you can't do my work for me.
Right.
And I can't do yours for you. You can give me some good tidbits or some pointers. You can even, you know, really define the path for me. But at the end of the day, I have to do the work. And so, you know, those men don't have to have the answers for each other. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of the 12-step sponsoring that goes on. Just a lot of, you know, I'll have a graduate from 8 years ago that will send me a text, how many guys you got tonight? And what that means is, hey, me and my wife and my son are coming up to cook dinner for everybody tonight at the center. And what they see is, you know, these folks that are coming up to be a part of their lives, even though they don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of service.
Lots of service. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the role of service and other challenges in early recovery. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. Thanks for listening.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings at 9 o'clock for Medicine on Call. Learn strategies to protect you and your family in the age of Obamacare.
This is Tracy Pearson with Prissy Tomboy. Listen to the Prissy Tomboy radio show every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time as I interview special guests that will inspire adventure and fitness for females.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options such as quantitative EEG, also known as brain mapping, hormonal and nutritional assessments, neuropsychological testing, and cognitive therapy, along with traditional 12-step facilitation. And we can even offer you, if appropriate, a gentle medically managed detox. Please contact us at 770-696-9862.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Susan Blank, and today in studio I have Brett Bagley, who's the founder and director of Purple Recovery Services for Men. This is an important, I'll let Brett and David kind of discuss how we define purple and how it's helpful.
Thank you. I was actually thinking about your approach with helping family members be comfortable bringing their sons or their spouses to you, because quite frankly, when you look at purple, it's not what you expect when you look at a treatment center. It doesn't have all of these locked doors and everything, and it's a certain amount of trust that they're placing. And regularly, I will tell them, take your son to Purple. This is the best spent dollar. They're going to learn how to live life sober. But I'm just wondering, what is your approach in talking to family members about what addiction is and what it is that we're treating to help get the process started?
Well, that's a great question, David. I was recently watching a YouTube video that you can go out there and look at. It's entitled How Wolves Change Rivers.
I have seen that. That's a great video.
It's probably the best explanation of a really complicated process, but it took a 5-minute video to explain it, right? And so my challenge on a daily basis in meeting with families, that the young men are sold. I have a half pipe in the parking lot at Purple, and they're like, oh, it can't be that bad if you can skate here. Right? there's guitars hanging on the wall. It just, it's built to be attractive to them. But for the families to overcome the, this looks like a frat house kind of feel, the challenge is that we have to help them understand how we see it. I'm helped in the fact that my father works there, and so, there's a little bit of the father-son dynamic duo going on. And Adam, my number two guy, the newest addition to the staff is his mother, right? So we just kind of continued that trait. But so I see addiction as a little more of a broader scope now. For the really complicated detail stuff, I defer to Susan. I defer to you guys, right? But, looking at Adler's stages of development and, Bill Wilson's a founder of 12-Step Recovery and the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, and his mother was a direct descendant, direct disciple, student of Adler, right? And not many people know that.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
And then, of course, Roland Hazard saw Dr. Young, Carl Young, for a year. Was an individual patient of Dr. Carl Young's, right? So, do you start talking about Young and Adler? I mean, we've got some of the greatest psychological minds of our time that went into making this happen, right? And so, and I think that, of course, it was divinely inspired. But Bill, And divine meaning that there was a plan that was playing out. Like, Bill's mom was a student of Adler's, crazy, right? But, so, you look at a kid, and most of the kids, most of the young adults that I see, and when I say you look at a kid, I'm talking about 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, right? And they come from the generation who was put on Ritalin, because they were ADD at 6 and 7 and 8 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And their families will describe them as anxious and discontented and irritable and restless. And, you know, I use the term maladapted to life. Now, just because you're ADD doesn't mean you're an addict, right? And just because you're anxious doesn't mean you're an addict. And just because you're depressed doesn't mean you're an addict. And just because you're restless, irritable, and discontent doesn't mean you're an addict. But if you take all that and you look at like an upside-down umbrella, you take all that, and then at the bottom of the umbrella, everything that makes that go away, that makes that better, that fixes that, is an addictive behavior, right? Some type of, whether that's using or whether that's stealing candy from the gas station at 9 years old, right? Or whether that's sexual behavior, masturbation, like what, you know, shopping, any number of things, right? That we can become addicted about, right? But the point of the addiction is not that it fixes something, right? A whole slew of somethings in most case, mm-hmm. right? So, I call that maladaption, right? And there's a book coming out entitled Cancer, the Emperor of All Maladies. And I heard that title and I thought, that's not true, right? Like, addiction is the emperor of all maladies. It's just so many people are out there in the world thinking that they have something other than, right? Now, I'm not saying that my clients aren't walking in the door and absolutely, on an acute basis, meet criteria for diagnosis in other ways. And I'm not saying that I don't have patients that are truly cross-addicted or cross-diagnosed or dual-diagnosed or whatever little cutie term we're using.
We're using this week.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying, you know, I treat 3.5 million people seek some sort of care mm-hmm. in the United States every year. Mm-hmm. And I treat 0.00001% of that. I have to believe that that 0.00001% is in some way like spiritually or divinely, like their path has been led to me in some way other than they just stumbled across me on the internet. Most people tell me when I ask, how'd you find us? They're like, well, so-and-so told us and then so-and-so and then we saw this and we knew so-and-so. You know, it's four or five different roads all that pointed to purple, right? So, in any case, you know, all of that was all the restless, irritable, discontent, and ADD, and anxious and depressed. It was fixed. It was fixed by getting high, right? Mm-hmm. Like lit my brain up like a Christmas tree, like I had never felt before, for a time. And that time's different for everybody, right? And to what degree that affects me, or to what degree I have that debt. I like John Kelly out of Harvard Medical School quantifies this addiction debt. Recovery capital, right? Real simple, pluses and minuses, mm-hmm. right? And really what we're talking about is maladaption debt and life capital, right? We just mm-hmm. kind of make it more specific for addicts that need a little more of a map, mm-hmm. a roadmap for how to live life. And so that umbrella, that upside-down umbrella, if you look at that, drugs aren't the problem. They're the solution, but they're a solution that stopped working. Then what we're really looking at is remove drugs and alcohol from the bottom of the umbrella and insert something. And what's that something that's going to address the maladaption? Well, like we talked about at the beginning of the program, that's God, people, and self, right? How do you get to God, people, and self? How do you get to higher power? And I'm not talking about a religious God. I'm just saying, like, being connected, and God, people, and self are really start having a lot of connections, right? Like, mm-hmm. To address that, what is that piece that addresses all those maladaptions, right? And so that's, you know, what Purple's trying to do is to create some environments to allow them to plug in to people, to allow them to sit with themselves. You know, at the end of every piece of exercise, every physical activity that we do, we immediately sit down and meditate. And it drives them crazy. They're just vibrating. But I'm trying to help them sit and be with self. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to help them listen to all those little endorphins firing mm-hmm. in their brain. I mean, people say, oh, runner's high, it's so great. Well, not to an addict. Not to an addict who knows what a real high is.
Right.
Right? Like runners, I get high on life. Well, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But that's because our brains are maladapted, right? And that's what mm-hmm. I say is that we've been watching black and white TV our whole lives until we found drugs and alcohol. Until we found addictive behaviors. You know, I stole a candy bar from a gas station when I was 9. That lit me up like, oh, this is awesome. Why would I ever do anything other than this? Right? Mm-hmm. So that's not working anymore. What is it that I'm going to do? And I got to get the brain. And that's where some of the science that's coming out is so magical. But it's really something we've known all
right.
along, and that Bill Wilson stumbled across or was divinely inspired into, was that, when we're together as recovering persons, we can rise up far above the potential we would have ever met by ourselves. And that in together in community, not because we're exercising together or running around a lake, but because we're one anothering one another, supporting one another because of God, people, and self, we're able to change what is addressing that restless, irritable, and discontent. What's addressing the anxious and the ADD? And so often, when I get a patient in, for the first 30 days, I just say, let's see what you're like 30 days from now, having not used drugs and having engaged in, spiritual behaviors like eating, sleeping, talking with other human beings. Because my patients aren't doing that prior to coming here, right?
Right.
They're living
right.
to use and using to live.
And generally, by the time they come to Purple or to AHC, they're just using. They're not doing any sort of living. They're totally isolated. And as you said, they're...
And they're not getting high even though they're using.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, mm-hmm. it's stopped working. They're using to keep from being sick. They don't even know why they're using, but they can't stop. And life is dismal.
Yeah, yeah. I like your emphasis on God, others, and self, and how they seem to, in everything that Purple does, all three of those things are there in this kind of equal force of they're all important and they all have to be a part of the process.
I'm known for saying in the 12-step methodology that steps 1 through 10 account for about 3% of the goodies that recovery has to offer. That 97% of recovery happens in steps 11 and 12. And 11 is communion with higher power, and 12 is service to others.
Service.
Mm-hmm. Right? And that all that other stuff, that the self, is not, and the 12 steps, they take a, they're not the popular methodology these days. These days, treatment is all about, quote, meeting people where they're at, right?
Mm-hmm.
12 steps have been doing that for years, okay? But the thing is, and Purple's motto is, you set the bar high in the sky, right? And you let everybody plug in where they're going to plug in, right? The person that goes to 12-step recovery, a fellowship, who, is a hopeless, strung-out junkie, living on the street with no social skills, no job, no family, whatever, and, they sober up for a couple of years, but eventually they return, to drinking, right? But generally, that person, people would say, oh, that is not a success. He didn't stay sober. That's not a success. But 12-step recovery, because they're not an organization with an axe to grind or a profit dollar to worry about, they don't have to make a statement about that. They're just like, hey, great, mm-hmm. that guy's not a part of what we're doing anymore, but he's more happy and usefully whole than he was. Right? So,
and that's what we're looking for. This is Detailing Addiction. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction and medical director of the Atlanta Healing Center. Please join me on Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Detailing Addiction. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and in studio today I have Brett Bagley, who is the founder and director of Purple Recovery Services for Men. If you're interested in learning more about their program, please check them out on the web at www.purpletreatment.com, or you can call and ask questions, get more information by dialing 678-572-6856. That's 678-572-6856. So we've been having a very interesting discussion about how recovery works and what your definition of addiction is. There's been some pushback in the media here recently about 12-step. And I'm not going to give the article any more readership than it's already gotten, but in some fairly impressive journals, and then, of course, places like Huffington Post and other groups are commenting. It's lit up our American Society of Addiction Medicine and like-minded docs who are very supportive of 12-step recovery, and I'm referring to the idea that 12 steps really are irrelevant and don't work. What do you think about that?
Well, first thing I'll tell you, Susan, is I began my journey in recovery in October of 1996. And if you go back and look at Time Magazine's cover in the month of October 1996, it reads, Addicts and Alcoholics Cured.
Cured. Oh, I missed that article.
That was the the news article that was covering the program, which I believe was entitled Moderation Management. Mm-hmm. And it was a woman who had not liked their approach to 12-step recovery, and I think specifically Alcoholics Anonymous, and had left and started her own program. And the program was based on a point system for drinks. And I remember asking my counselor at the time that they didn't have a point system for cocaine use, and what did that mean? And she said, I think you're just going to be stuck in treatment. That woman later went on to kill a family driving down the mm-hmm. road under the influence of alcohol. And so I'm not saying anything about her program. I'm just saying she killed a family driving down the road under the influence of alcohol. And and to use a 12-step term, she doesn't have what I want. So I find people in life who have what I want, and I try to do what they did. First of all, the thing that I loved so much about that article was the fact that subsequent articles came out from major news publications standing up for 12-step recovery. Mm-hmm. People saying, I think you're a little misinformed.
Right.
Here's the thing is, we just had a discussion about how wolves change rivers or how, you know, understanding addiction. To be blunt, many professionals in this field do not understand addiction. They understand a medical model. Mm-hmm. They understand, you know, that's what you need to go to a hospital for, right? And, mm-hmm. and you go to a hospital and 4 days later you leave out and you have been physiologically removed from the problem. Therefore, there's no more problem, right? Well, no,
wrong.
Because you and I wouldn't have jobs if that was the case, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so for persons to not have an understanding of the spiritual aspect of this, mm-hmm. and spirituality is struggling to have its own popularity in our country these days, a very secular country. So I love the fact that people came out kind of mm-hmm. in droves and other articles came out. And one of those articles cited a friend of mine, John F. Kelly, who's at Harvard School Medical School, who does – and if you Google him right now, the first article you're going to see is an article entitled Why AA Works. And it's not based on his own opinion. It's based on scientific research that he's been conducting for years, mm-hmm. right? And he works with William White, and they, you know, develop the recovery-oriented systems of care and all that good stuff. You know, the proof's in the pudding.
Right.
Right? Millions of people throughout the years, lives have gotten better mm-hmm. As a result. You know, again... you know, I'm not saying that purple works for every individual on the planet. I'm saying that I work with 0.00001% that find me. I didn't go find them, right? And 12-step recovery works for millions of people. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work for you, then go somewhere else.
Right. Right?
At the end of the day, just like you can't do the work for me, 12-step recovery can't do the work for me, mm-hmm. right? And I think there's a lot of confusion about what a treatment center might do for an individual, what a therapist might do for an individual, and what a 12-step fellowship might do for an individual. Because the recovery portion of the program, meaning the 12-step literature and the work that you're supposed to do, is it doesn't happen through osmosis. And so you can hang out there all you want, just like you can hang out in your therapist's lobby all
right.
you want, until you go in and you're real honest with, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to do any changing, right? I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in the 80s, and I didn't hang out in the lobby. I went back and I sat in the chemotherapy chair, and I got IV drips for hours upon hours and hours for years. And that was a life-changing experience. Recovery to me is exactly the same, right? You got to get out of the lobby, you got to go in the back, and you got to sit and do the uncomfortable stuff for mm-hmm. hours and hours and hours for years and years and years. And people say, well, that's overkill, and da da da. And exactly, why do you think I just said that addiction is the emperor of all maladies, not cancer, right? But we're in a society where we want it now, we want it fast,
right.
which is our obsession with having a pill about it,
mm-hmm.
right? And there are pills that help with the medical aspect of
sure.
this. There's just no pill that helps with the spiritual aspect of
no.
it. There's no pill that replaces doing one's own work, right? And, you know, I can go to McDonald's every day and order through the drive-thru and come then sit and talk to you about how I want to have, you know, an awesome body. But if I'm not willing to do any work, we can talk and talk and talk, and I can sit in your lobby all I want. It's not going to change the, you know. So,
but it really highlights, I think that it's not just all one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times these articles that come out will put the emphasis that AA is being touted as the one and only thing. And in reality, there's therapy, there's medication that helps, and there's AA, and there's church, and there's other types of groups that all come together to help a person be a whole person. And my experience is that there are people who can go to AA, and they meet the perfect sponsor, and they find the perfect group, and they grab hold, and they love it, and they never need treatment, and they mm-hmm. don't need anything else, and it's perfect for them. And there's others who need a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and together with support and just trying different things, they find what works. And so it's not this all or nothing thing that gets thrown out in that article and,
right.
and other.
And the other point that I would make, David, is, you know, I was using the terminology with cancer. You know, if you had skin cancer on your nose, there would be some things you would need to do to address that. If you had small cell metastasized lung cancer, well, that's a very different thing, Mm-hmm. Right? So addiction's not addiction, 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 right? Like, you know, that dad who says, well, I just stopped drinking one day because I wanted to. Well, great for him. I'm glad he did that, mm-hmm. you know? Or I went to church one day and, you know, they said the right thing. Well, that's wonderful. You know, most people don't ever seek professional help. They don't seek help from people like us, right? They find help through a pastor or a trusted friend or what have you. But addiction's not across the board. It's not the same thing, right? There's levels of addiction debt, and there's going to be things that work for people and things that don't, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know.
And I think with our young people today, the thing that worries me and the reason that places like Purple are so necessary is that it's the same disease, but it has been started at a much earlier age. And many of our young people that come into treatment are not addicted to one thing. Their brain has been exposed to a chemical soup that's unbelievable, that has actually occurred during times when their brain is developing. We talk about rehabilitation, but these folks haven't been habilitated. They're not the Bill Wilsons who have had a career and a job and a family and have learned social skills and have managed their lives. These are young people that may not have finished school, that may have trouble with the law, that may have never learned a physical skill. They don't even really know how to launder their own clothes. So they don't have this skill set. In addition to the fact that their brain has now, you know, had a problem. And so needing a program that's extended like we see at Purple, where they get real life skills over a period of time, introduction to the fellowship and the ability to practice those skills, I really appreciate the work that you do, and I'm so grateful that you were here. Please check out their program on the web at www.purpletreatment.com. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.
Thanks for having me.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.